Button.
And the Buddha's journey in sobriety is the Buddha's journey in spirituality was started by seeing going out from behind the protective screen of his life in the castle. He was brought up in the upper classes, the warrior classes, which in his time were the upper classes, and he saw in the world all the old age, sickness, and death that was going on. And this was these sights, along with the sight of a renunciate, a person who had renounced seeking lasting happiness and material things, were the spur to the Buddha's mission. When we hear that this is what caused the Buddha to leave his incredibly comfortable conditions and to is basically the founding motivation of his spiritual path, it can sound pretty unusual and odd. One reason is because we're used to hearing of spiritual founders being contacted by gods. We're used to hearing stories of one man generally alone, and then a voice parts the clouds or some such, and it's God, and God's giving him directions. And so the idea that something as mundane as seeing old age, sickness, and death would be the cause of such a great spiritual path can sound unusual. And then also B, it sounds unusual because, well, we all know that there's old age, sickness, and death, and why this should be, of all things, should be the sights that spurred the Buddha on can also sound a little strange. I mean, we'd more likely think it would be something incredible that he saw, not just a bunch of old, sick, dying people. But it's very important, and it's very instructive, this, whether it's a myth or whether it actually happened, it goes to the very heart of this spiritual practice, which is not turning away from seeing what the Buddha called dukkha, or stress and suffering in life, really seeing it in a different way with what he called the panachaka, which is the eye of wisdom. And there's a normal way that most people see old age, sickness, death, and to go on with the Buddha's definition of dukkha, he said not only is it old age, sickness, and death, but it's loss, it's sorrow, lamentation, it's grief, it's not getting what we want, it's losing someone or something that we love, and it's being stuck with someone or something that we despise. So all these things are inevitable, the Buddha said, in life. We all know that they're going to happen. And yet, the Buddha said, there's something about us that makes us turn away and find an escape clause or believe that it won't happen to us. All human beings know that there's going to be old age, sickness, and death, that there's going to be not getting what we want, that we will be separated from what we love. And yet, on a day-by-day basis, we walk around putting that off. It's called spiritual complacency. And the Buddha spent an inordinate amount of time, well, not inordinate, that would imply that it's incorrect. He spent a lot of time developing practices that were meant to cut through this fundamental denial. One of the chants that he asked the people do on a daily basis, the reflections, go like this. I am of the nature to grow old. I am of the nature to become sick. I am of the nature to die. All that is dear to me I will be separated from, and all that I will be left with are the results of my actions. Happy thoughts. But in general, the point is, again, the Buddha saw that there's this tendency to want this all. We know that it's happening, but we don't want it to happen to us, or we don't really believe it will happen to us is more likely, or what I'm trying to get across. There's this putting it over there. And this putting it over there allows us, through this complacency, to not have urgency in our spiritual practice and in just the important things in life, that we shunt aside in the belief that we have stability, that we have time. It's interesting, I've been thinking a lot about this week. A year and a half ago, two very young guys sat in my backyard who were no longer doing heroin, and they sat in my backyard, and I introduced them in the hope that they would bond over their sobriety, and the younger guy was talking and the older guy was listening, and they both had seen innumerable people die from heroin, shooting up and dying. And a year and a half later, they're both dead. The older one died earlier this week, and the younger one died a few months ago. And both of them knew far better than I that this was a likely outcome of shooting dope. Yet they both didn't believe that it would happen to them. Now, why am I saying this? It can sound like, well, I don't shoot dope. This has got nothing to do with me. But it's that same, exact same denial that allows us to spend lives getting stressed out day in and day out about stuff that has no importance whatsoever. It's that same denial that allows us day in and day out to say, well, I've got time to develop a gratitude practice or develop, call and make a relationship that's gone wrong, make it right. I've got time to be creative in the future. I've got time to pursue volunteer work or whatever it is I wanted to do in the future. This complacency is every bit as deadly, because I know when we're in our 20s and 30s, it sounds remote how quickly life flies by. But I guarantee you, it does. And then one moment you wake up and you're, God forbid, in your 40s, north of your 40s, and you realize, oh my God, I'm still in this job or in this relationship, or I'm still getting worked up and bent out of shape about stuff that in the long term makes absolutely no lasting importance whatsoever. I work in probably the most meaningless line of business for my income you can possibly have, which for me makes it very easy because I don't give a damn. I just do the best I can, but I don't care. But I watch as people get incredibly bent out of shape over absolutely nothing. And then, sadly enough to say, I see a lot of them die. Of course, the titles are they died of cancer or high blood pressure or sudden heart attacks. But it boils down to the same thing. Stress is just as deadly in the long term as heroin or cigarettes or anything you else name. In fact, stress kills far more than those aforementioned. So looking at and seeing the discomforts and the real pains of life is incredibly important. It's at the heart of our spiritual practice. As they say, I don't know who said this, but there's that saying, pain is the touchstone of growth. It's really, really important to use our tragedies in life, our losses, our griefs, our disappointments, our injuries, our physical discomforts, all of these things that we try to distract ourselves from, it's really important to, in fact, turn towards them and use them as a means of growth, as a way to remind ourselves that, A, this is what's going to happen to the body. This is what's going to happen to me. This is what's going to happen in life. I am going to lose people. I am going to feel pains in the body. I am going to be disappointed. I am going to experience rejections. I am going to be insulted or hurt or whatever. It's important to turn towards these things rather than to try to push them away. It's interesting. The first thing I've noticed when I got the news that my dear friend had died this week, the first thing that I noticed is my brain first went, of course, to that thing that we all do. We try to find a tag, a little statement to put underneath it to make it all make sense. And also partially to make it sound like it won't happen to me. When I look at obituaries in the paper, I immediately first try to figure out, you know, how did they die? What did they do wrong, you know? Certainly they must have, you know, smoked 3 packs a day, or they must have, you know, hopefully it'll say something that's avoidable. But there's also this wanting to put a little label on it so I won't have to think about it. Oh, well, that's, you know, they were old, or they were this, or they were that, or, well, they knew for a long time that they had this issue, whatever. There's a desire to put a little label that will make it all go away, that will make it easy to file away in the filing cabinet, to explain it so that I don't have to live with this as a very real possibility for me, or that this is a universal thing. And then, as we all are familiar with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's groundbreaking work on the way people come to terms with their own mortality, way before they get to acceptance or even depression, the real feeling of it, before you get anywhere near that, you first got what? You got denial, then you got anger, and then you got bargaining. All of which have nothing to do with actually feeling the real feelings or dealing with the real issue. And no, anger is not dealing with the real issue. Anger is, as psychiatrists and therapists and psychologists say, it's a masking emotion so that we don't have to feel the real deep feelings within. So there's this human tendency to turn away. Now, how do we do this on a day-by-day basis? It's really important not, and I'm not in any way urging people to turn on the news all the time. That's not the way we become familiar with old age, sickness, and death, and the reality. The way that the Buddha had in mind is by, on a day-by-day basis, checking in with the body. Scanning the body and feeling the body and feeling what's going on inside of us and becoming aware that this thing, that this shell that keeps us alive, this life support system is in fact something that it's a miracle that it's even working right now. As Ajahn Brahm says, there's this tendency to go to a doctor and say, oh my God, there's something wrong, you know, I've got a pain. As Ajahn Brahm says, well, we've actually got millions of parts interactive and working, and if any little part of them goes wrong, the entire thing can fall apart. So we really should go to the doctor and say, hey, doctor, there's something right happening. I'm sick. Because that's actually the much more likely thing to happen in a human body. What we have when we're healthy is a very, very unstable, transient, passing event that has very, very limited lifespan. And by going within and reflecting these reflections that we are of the nature to grow old, sick, and die, that we will lose the people and things that we love, these reflections, A, they spur us on to two great things in life. and here's where I'll close. The two great things are, one, we appreciate the people and those moments that we take for granted of health and mental stability, which is not a given, and happiness and the joy of our friends and the joy of the people around us. We don't take these things for granted. Just like a beautiful sunset that we know will end, we really experience it because we know that there's always a possibility that this conversation I'm having might be the last I have with this person. Or this might be the last time I feel healthy enough to do some activity. People all the time become injured and suddenly can't do things that they love doing. So we bring a sense of incredible appreciation, which can make life not only seem so much broader and more amazing, but also it stretches out our perception of time. So we develop a sense of gratitude for each moment when we're really in touch with how fragile life is. And the second part, of course, is that the Buddha said it develops something called samvega, which is a disgust at our actions when we get so wrapped up and stressed out about things that don't matter. And he said instead we develop pasada, which is a turning inwards to rebalance ourselves to find peace within. So that we're not exclusively only trying to find our happiness in work, relationships, exercise, whatever it is we love out in the world, we're also developing a source for true happiness within. This is the twin results of seeing the fragility and the inevitability of dukkha in life, of stress and suffering in life. It doesn't make us go down into a ball of weeping depression. Far from it. Just like it spurred the Buddha to greatness, these awareness, seeing with the true eye of wisdom, is what spurs us on to look at life from an entirely different way. I'll end by saying that part of looking at the body or experiencing when we are sick and when we are in discomfort is not to compare it to the shoulds that we carry around. I should feel better. I should be happy. I should be more buoyant. I should have more energy. I should be this or that. I have these expectations and they're not being met. Again, as Ajahn Brahm said, there's nothing wrong with what's going on if we're whatever we're going through, we should bring that spirit of observing it, not from the spirit of trying to push it or make it go away at first, but simply becoming aware. Then, of course, if we're in discomfort, we use the breath to relax us, and of course we go to the doctor as we're sick. But when we are experiencing these things, or when we're experiencing loss, just experience the grief from the perspective of, oh, this is what it's like, reminding ourselves again that this is just as much a part of life as anything else. So I thank you for listening to this grim talk of mine tonight, but then hey, it would be a little weird if I gave a happy talk this week. So now we go around in the circle. I ask that you don't comment on anybody else's shares. I'm not going to comment or give feedback tonight because I want as many people to share as possible. If you don't want to share, just say your name and pass, or just pass if you don't want to say your name. No pressure whatsoever. We'll share for about a half an hour, and then for the final 10 minutes, we'll go to show of hands, and we'll start here.